Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very good morning to you on this Tuesday, November the 3rd. Welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, the rights group Amnesty International says the oil giant Shell has not lived up to promises to clean up the Niger Delta.
When you go to those communities, the first thing that welcomes you is the stench of crude oil. The people want that to change.
And after last month's elections in Zanzibar were declared null and void, the political uncertainty won't go away.
The mediation is going on, and we don't know yet whether there'll be elections in 90 days or whether there'll be the continuation of election results as demanded by the opposition.
Stay tuned to this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
First to Nigeria, where the rights group Amnesty International says that claims by the oil giant Shell that it has cleaned up heavily polluted areas of the Niger Delta are blatantly false. In a report released on Tuesday, Amnesty highlights what it describes as ongoing contamination at four spill sites in Nigeria, which Shell said it had cleaned up years ago. The report also takes aim at the Nigerian government, which it said had failed to regulate the oil industry. Now, Nigeria's new president, Muhammadu Buhari, has promised to reform the oil sector. Via Skype, Mahmoud Kamara, business and human rights campaigner with Amnesty in the UK, told me what they were expecting from the new Nigerian leadership.
The message Amnesty International has is that the cleanup of the Niger Delta is long overdue, and the Nigerian government has a responsibility, in fact has an obligation, to ensure that the rights of the people in the Niger Delta and the environmental rights of the communities in the Niger Delta are not only respected, protected and fulfilled, but that they put effort, they put pressure on the companies like Shell, which is Nigeria's biggest onshore oil company, play its role, ensure that it cleans up the environment that has been polluted, and ensure that the environment is restored to a situation where the people can go back to do their farming, because that is all what the people ask for.
President Buhari has estimated that some 250,000 barrels of crude oil are stolen every day, and Shell says that theft of that sort, presumably people tapping pipelines illicitly, is the reason for the oil spills. What's Amnesty's response to that?
We think the number of spills that the company has admitted to is a significant amount that should worry any responsible company, that should worry any responsible government. And we think that Shell should not be making false claims about oil theft or sabotage, because that is what they always say. And we have in the past, we've shown, our research has shown, and that some of the figures that Shell often publishes are not actually in line with the reality on the ground. And when I was there in September, speaking to people in the community, speaking to the residents in one of the communities in Ogoniland, you see the frustration in their face. You see the desperation. You see that they have had a lot of this kind of statements in the past from Shell, and spills happen as a result of equipment failure. But the point is, the responsibility lies on Shell to clean this environment after they've been polluted. Now imagine this kind of things happening in places like the UK or in the Netherlands, where Shell has its headquarters. Shell will not wait for 10 years or even one day for them to contain spills and to clean them and restore the community.
20 years ago this month, on November the 10th, 1995, the Ogoni environmental activist Kansara Wiwa was executed. He had campaigned tirelessly against the damage caused by the oil industry. Now, in those days, Nigeria was ruled by a military dictatorship. These days, it's run by a democratically elected civilian administration. But how has the country's oil sector changed in the meantime?
When I spoke to an 83-year-old man living in Ogoniland who has experienced a number of oil spills, he's seen companies come and go, he's seen governments come and go, that is one of the frustration that he expressed to me. In fact, if anything has changed, it has gone from bad to worse, and especially for the people living in affected communities. When you go to those communities, the first thing that welcomes you is the stench of crude oil. The people want that to change.
Mahmoud Kamara from Amnesty International in London. Our correspondent Adrian Creech has just been to Ogoniland, and the following report has been adapted for Africa Link by Eunice Wanjiru. Apart from the stench of oil, local fishermen also face the frustration of empty catches.
The nets come out of the water empty again. This is almost becoming the order of the day in Bodo. Sinebari Bonwa has to sail for hours in order to catch anything. In 2008 and 2009, thousands of barrels with oil from a pipeline belonging to Shell spilled into the water.
Because of the oil spill from Shell's pipeline, one can hardly catch anything. The environment is destroyed. We even had oysters back then. But those days are gone.
At the beginning of the year, the oil company Shell paid a compensation of $83 million. Peter Lenu, a representative of the community, complains that only a few profited from this, and barely anyone in the village has a job.
We have not been in good terms with them over the years because they have neglected the communities, most especially the Bodo community and other communities in Ogoniland where the facilities are. Where you have, they don't maintain the facilities, they neglect the community, they look for a way to corner a group of, say, community leaders or representatives and give them one or two stipend and they report.
A few kilometres away from the shores, I went to Ken Sarowiwa's gravesite together with his brother, Prince Harry Sarowiwa. For years, Ken Sarowiwa fought for a share of the oil revenues for the residents of Ogoni and for human rights and environmental protection. 20 years ago, he was executed by the military regime together with other activists despite international protests. His brother Harry puts the blame on Shell.
I believe that he sacrificed his life for everybody. And people may say it's not worth it because what had Ogoni people got or have Ogoni people gotten? But all the things he kept down are coming to pass, one after the other. It took us time, but finally, everybody saw that Ken was speaking the truth. You can see that he died for speaking the truth.
Experts say that it will take 30 years before the environmental damage can be cleared up. The costs amount to $1 million. Shell is the only company that has extracted crude oil in Ogoniland. Although Shell stopped its operation in Ogoniland a long time ago, residents are still asking for compensation and a massive cleanup of the environment. The multinational company, as well as the new government of Nigeria, have repeatedly promised to clear up the damage caused, with no concrete results till now. Igor Welli is the general manager in external relations for Shell in Nigeria.
We are working with the government to commence that implementation as quickly as possible. So those are the things we are looking at, how we can really help to be part of the solution, of those problems.
Fisherman Sinebari Bonwa no longer believes in a quick solution. The environment is destroyed and the society is divided into winners and losers. It is clear to him that the oil in Ogoniland is more of a curse than a blessing.
And that report was written by Adrian Creech.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
Zanzibar's main opposition leader, Saif Sharif Hamad of the Civic United Front, called for calm on Monday following the explosion of two bombs within minutes of one another on the archipelago on Saturday. Hamad had claimed victory in the elections on October the 25th, but the Electoral Commission ruled that the vote must be repeated because of violations of electoral law. I asked our correspondent in Zanzibar, Mohamed Halef, whether there was any evidence linking the blasts to the elections.
Actually, till now, no. The police here hasn't issued any statement which links these two incidents, election and these explosions. Till now, they say they are going on with the investigations and they cannot say actually who is behind it. So there is no way of connecting it, according to the police sources, that these two are related by any way.
There is going to be a meeting this week between opposition leaders on Zanzibar and the head of the Tanzanian Armed Forces, Davis Mwangyangi. What is known about this meeting?
From the beginning, actually, it was a call from the opposition party that they want to meet the army leader so as to discuss the issues here in the election, because then there was some intervention which was noticed by the army, and opposition were worried that maybe the army was involved in some of the incidents here. And so they wanted to make things clear. The incidents that were happening here, for example, in one day, the army ambushed and sieged the Electoral Commission Center where they were announcing the results. And journalists and observers were locked in and locked out. Those who were in were not allowed to go out. And those who were out were not allowed to come in. So for these incidents, then the opposition wanted a clear signal from the army whether it is by any way involved in any political maneuver or process here in Zanzibar.
This meeting hasn't taken place yet, has it?
No, not yet. It is expected because President Kikwete said that he has instructed the army chief, David Mwamnyange, to meet with the opposition leader to talk about those issues.
When are fresh elections likely to be held? And can you see the opposition agreeing to a caretaker administration run by the incumbent president?
Now the mediation is going on, and we don't know yet what will be coming out from this mediation, whether there'll be elections in 90 days as stipulated by the ZEC chairman, Jecha, Salim Jecha, when he nullified the elections, or whether there'll be the continuation of election results as demanded by the opposition. So we don't know yet. I asked this question yesterday to Mr. Hamad, whether he will be a part of the government after this nullification, and he said, no, I cannot discuss this matter now. We are still on mediation. We have to wait and to see what will be happening in this mediation.
How worried are people in Zanzibar by the current political uncertainty? Do they believe it will soon be over?
It is a combination, actually. It is a mixture of feelings. There are a portion of people who believe that the process of mediation will be ending with very positive fruits. That means they'll be getting what they need. And there are people who just don't believe anything, who just don't trust the system. And they say it is enough and they are worried that nothing will be happening out of this. And then maybe in near future, 1 or 2 weeks to come, there'll be demonstrations and violence here in Zanzibar.
Mohamed Halef in Zanzibar.
Africa on the move.
21 years have elapsed since the end of apartheid in South Africa, and in the meantime, a whole new generation has grown up, often referred to as born frees. South Africans who were born in that watershed year of 1994, on the cusp of political and social change, clearly have a special story to tell. Young South African writer Swana Busonova has been talking to born frees for his book 21 at 21. This report by Stefan Mull is read now by Privilege Mushandiri.
Akusayi kuphinda. Indlela yam iphepha izicithi nenduli ukuya endlini.
That is Swana Busonova, an upcoming author reading his latest work, which he wrote in his native Xhosa language. Many of his stories give voice to young people who are discovering their identity, touching, among other issues, the sensitive topic of homosexuality. Swana Biso grew up in Maspumelele, near Cape Town. He is proud of his cultural heritage, but promotes respect, tolerance, and acceptance between all people. But unsurprisingly, not everybody agrees with him.
You are being disrespectful to our culture. It doesn't happen in the Xhosa culture that two men can be together or two females can be together. And, you know, my response has always been that is culture something that has always been there? Is culture natural? Can you say it's natural? Or is it something that's created by people over time?
For his latest project, Swana Biso collected the life stories of born frees, young people born after South Africa's democratic transition. His book titled 21 at 21, The Coming of Age of a Nation, is a joint publication with social activist Melanie Verwood. Together, they interviewed 21-year-olds whose brutally honest voices give critical insight on modern-day South Africa.
So there was a change in 1994, and we wanted to see and wanted to hear, how does it feel like to be living in a democratic country? You know, now that there's a change, that everyone is equal in this country, What are your feelings about this country? What are your hopes and dreams for the future? What do you think about South Africa right now?
One of the youngsters interviewed by Swanawiso is hip-hop artist Yonela Tayacheka. Swanawiso was impressed by her courage to live openly as a lesbian. Yonela lives in the Cape Flats, a neighborhood terrorized by gangs and one that witnesses frequent violent attacks on homosexuals. Yonela explains why she had to take such a stand.
Nobody's going to stand up for me and say, leave the child alone. It's because society says, yeah, it's cool, kill them, beat them up because they're the devil's children, you know.
Her own sister was brutally raped and murdered because she, like Yonela, was openly gay.
So this is the house. In 2011, that's where my sister's body was discovered. Yeah, it was in a dustbin behind the house. All I can say is that I'm cool with it now.
We were told to born free, but we still struggle. See, we walk in endless magnified vision. See, free.
For Swanawiso, the engagement does not stop with the publication of Yonela's story. He regularly visits and mentors his interviewees.
I look at people like Yonela and I know that the future is bright because they are working so hard.
Swanawiso and Yonela are determined to continue their fight with the power of their words.
And that report was written by Stefan Mull. We stay in South Africa, where fresh developments are expected in the case of Paralympic sprinter Oscar Pistorius. Later today, state prosecutors will try and persuade appeals judges at the Supreme Court of Appeals in Bloemfontein that Pistorius deserves a murder conviction for the killing of his girlfriend Reeva Steenkamp rather than the culpable homicide conviction that he has already received. I asked our correspondent in Johannesburg, Tuzo Kamalo, how the prosecutors were expected to argue their case.
The prosecutors are expected to argue that Judge Thokozile Masipa made a mistake or an error in interpreting the law of dolus eventualis. This is the law of intent to kill. They argue that she did not consider the evidence or the circumstantial evidence that they brought before the court, which showed that there was no mistake, there was no excuse for Pistorius to shoot like he said. Their version is that he knew when he pulled the trigger that there is a person behind the door, whether that person was Reeva or another person, but he knew that by pulling the trigger, the bullet or the bullets will kill the person behind the door.
How is the defense expected to proceed?
The defense has already stated that nothing was done wrong in terms of the law. They are saying the state is arguing on facts, and according to the laws, you cannot dispute the judge's verdict in that case basing on facts. They are saying if there is any change that is expected to happen in this case, a retrial, which they say again in law, that is the double justice, where it becomes unfair for Oscar Pistorius first to be charged and dragged to court on the same matter twice. They think Judge Masipa was right and Pistorius should be allowed to finish his 5-year sentence and then live his life as a free man.
Pistorius was released from prison into house arrest 2 weeks ago. Is he going to be attending the hearing?
Pistorius himself is not going to attend the hearing, but his defense is going to be there in court. By law, he's not mandated to attend there. What is going to happen? Most of the things that the judges are going to consider, they are going to be considering the court record of the whole trial. They've been given that, they've started that. And of course, the defense and the state, they also filed their heads of argument.
What about Reeva Steenkamp's family? Will they be in court?
It's very doubtful that they will be in court because the statements that they gave, they said whether Pistorius is sent back to prison for 10 years, whether he's sent back for 20 years or he finishes his parole, their daughter is not going to come back. So they have said they are not going to concentrate on what happens to Pistorius. Now is their time to concentrate on the projects that their daughter wanted to achieve, which is of helping the needy, helping the abused women. And they are saying their attention is focused there.
Has Pistorius been commenting on his case recently?
Since he came out, he has not commented, and it's only the family members on the day that he was released. They came out with a statement saying Pistorius is now home, his sentence has not been reduced, he's still going to serve his parole conditions, the 4-year remaining under strict conditions, and they said he has undertaken to follow all the conditions that have been given to him by correctional services.
Tuzo Kamalo in Johannesburg.
Making a difference.
And making a difference this week takes us to Cameroon, where a young scientist has received a prestigious award for his research into new, environmentally friendly and affordable building materials. He makes use of volcanic ash and laterite, a type of soil and rock that is rich in iron and aluminium. Mwaki Kinseka introduces him.
This applause from members of Cameroon's Academy of Sciences is in honor of Patrick Nindla Limukna as he presents the Young Scientist African Union Award, dubbed the Kwame Nkrumah Award, to his peers. The 35-year-old says he started his research 6 years ago when Cameroonian government announced plans to increase its cement production to 3 million tons every year. His research had shown the potential dangers resulted from CO2 emissions, and he came up with alternatives that can be used without effects on the environment.
In Cameroon, we have seen that we have a lot of volcanic ash which are not exploited, and also laterite, and we have seen in the composition of those two raw material that chemically it is possible to be used for the production of building material using this technology.
According to Patrick, not only CO2 will be reduced, Cameroonians will increase the offer of building materials with related socioeconomic advantages such as job creation. Jobarty Joseph, a Cameroonian local material promotion agent, says if Patrick's recommendations are applied by his government, many more people will have access to housing.
It is now for government to see how pilot production units or industrial units could be built so that these materials can actually be manufactured in greater quantities, so that the cost of acquiring these materials will also go down. And the local, I mean the average Cameroonian, can then acquire lodging. Because when you get into even towns like Yaoundé here in the capital of Cameroon, you see certain areas where people are living, they are quite really disheartening. And this is due to the fact that the construction materials in Cameroon are quite expensive.
Among the members of Cameroon's Academy of Sciences who were out to encourage Patrick was Nzeku Alain. He says the researcher has had good results, which all developing countries should make use of to protect the environment.
He's highly engaged with his research work. When it was difficult for him to continue because of lack of funds, he was not discouraged and contacted partners in Belgium and other countries. We as researchers are honored and want to work like him, but the government should make sure they implement his research findings.
Le gouvernement puisse continuer à soutenir la recherche comme ils l'ont fait.
Patrick says he will be taking his research findings to the November 30 Climate Change Forum in Paris, where world leaders are expected to meet and discuss how to save the environment.
Mwaki Kinseka reporting from Cameroon. A reminder of our main stories before we leave you. The rights group Amnesty International has said that claims by the oil giant Shell that it had cleaned up heavily polluted areas of the Niger Delta were blatantly false. The head of the opposition in Zanzibar has called for calm amid mediation efforts to defuse the political crisis brought on by the annulment of elections. And state prosecutors in South Africa will be seeking to persuade appeals judges later today that Oscar Pistorius should be tried for murder. And there we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you can contact us by sending an SMS to country code 49 160957 59510 and email to feedback.africa@dw.com or a letter to Africa Link DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. More stories from Africa at the same time tomorrow. Thank you for listening. This is Mark Caldwell in Bonn.